Hello and welcome back to Basement Breaks, a motorsport podcast. This past weekend, we got to watch the Singapore Grand Prix for F1 racing in Marina Bay, and it was a very exciting race to watch.
Oh yeah, exciting. Always a test for drivers' skill, but also their endurance. It's one of the hottest races of the year. We'll get into all of that, but in the meantime, we'll cue the intro.
And as always, we are your hosts, Foster and Steven, and we hope you enjoy this episode of Basement Breaks.
Marina Bay, back to Singapore. Last year, one of the most electric races of the season. Also, the only race that I missed live last season, which was pretty unfortunate. This one, we watched quali and the race on time, which was pretty fun, but it was also very early. And just for anyone who's listening or watching, we're both getting over being a little sick. Foster had a little throat issue, I had a little stomach issue. So bear with us as we try to finish this episode here. Try to clean out for what do we have? 3 weeks off? We'll put some episodes in between, but it's 3 weeks, right?
Yeah, I think it's 3 weeks break. So we'll be able to do some something with that time.
they're
We'll figure it out.
they're coming back
But
to the Americas next, so we gotta get under ourselves a little bit here. But
I'm getting excited for that 3 p.m. race.
oh yeah, that's gonna be incredible. But yeah, Marina Bay, and we'll kind of skim over practice. I did see George had quite a few offs. He was complaining about the car a little bit here and there, but getting into quali, we kind of had our thoughts on what was gonna happen. We both thought McLaren was gonna be strong, but we also thought Ferrari was gonna be strong, and something happened.
Yeah, there was a bit of an incident that happened, pun intended, incident. But anyway, Carlos Sainz was pushing a little bit too hard, and with about 8 minutes and 40 seconds left in Q3, bended into the wall and caused a red flag, which temporarily paused the session.
It did, and he was following. It was either Piastri or was it Norris? Do you remember? I think it might have been Piastri.
Honestly, I don't really remember.
All I saw was
Just
he was following McLaren that was finishing their lap and trying to catch a little bit of a toe, and then took the curb and with his cold tires just lost it, snapped, backed into a wall, and oh my gosh, that's a bummer.
yeah, I was surprised to see that it was at the beginning of his lap and not the end of the lap. Typically, people make that mistake when they're like in the thick of things in speed making decisions. But yeah, his tires were basically just not prepped well enough, which I think to a certain point comes back onto the team. It's not just Carlos Sainz at that point. Now, granted, he's the one that pushed too hard too early, but the tires were not effectively heated to what he was expecting. So that is what ultimately caused him to bin it into the wall.
And to double down on what you're saying, when Leclerc would he would eventually put a lap in, but it would get deleted. And he came on the radio saying, "Why, when I go into turn one, are my tires minus 10 degrees where they should be?" So that was a trend with Ferrari. It was also a trend with Williams, it seemed like, but they were knocked out in Q2. Albon was on the radio complaining about his tires, so it could have been multiple teams, but in terms of the most vocal ones, it was Ferrari and Alex Albon was kind of in that group too, complaining about tire temps on one of the hottest circuits of the year. So that's kind of interesting to me.
Yeah, the track temps, it's also interesting. I didn't know that other teams were necessarily also talking about struggling with that. But I think ultimately Ferrari took the brunt of it, considering that both of their cars got essentially knocked out of Q3. Once Leclerc's time got deleted, it was basically with knowing that how difficult it is to pass here, Ferrari was kind of written off at that point of being in competition for like the win, which was interesting.
Yeah, from that you might be able to scrap a podium, but you need a car that's like handedly first or second. And right now their car is somewhere first, second, or third, depending on the day. And today was not, or that day was not the day that it was first or second. Let's put it that way, at least from what I could see.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And We'll talk about the race and we'll talk about what they were end up being able to do with where they were put.
Of course.
I was surprised at that everyone was essentially talking going into the weekend through the weekend warm up and all the free practice sessions, that most people I think were putting it between McLaren and Ferrari or Lando and Leclerc. So I think that to me, that result in qualifying was so interesting because it completely wiped most of that away, what people were predicting for the race. So I think that it definitely threw a whole wrench into what the expected outcome of the weekend was going to bring.
Oh yeah, it threw a wrench in it, and then on top of that, you had Yuki qualify pretty well, and in Q3, you had Nico Hülkenberg kind of pick up the Ferrari pieces and sneak in. I think he qualified like P6 or something like that. Which I mean, for a Haas, for any backmarker car, that's or midfield car, that's impressive. Just taking advantage of being in the right place at the right time. So, with that being said, it was Lando P1, Max P2, Lewis P3. I want to say, was it? Oscar and Russell were P4 and P5 somewhere. Hülkenberg P6. Yuki P7.
Fernando Alonso, P7, Yuki, P8, and then the illegally track-driven and broken Ferrari in ninth and 10th.
So it led into a pretty exciting top 10 for a race start. You throw Yuki and Hulk in there. Hulk's just pretty calm, cool driver, but Yuki's all you always look for something with Yuki. And yeah, getting into the race, I mean, just right away, we saw a dive bomb, and it was from not anyone in the top 10, it was from Franco Colapinto, who dove down the Ferrari. Down, I who else did he dive bomb there? I think it was Carlos Sainz who he dove bombed first, but also Albon was kind of sitting there on the outside.
Yeah,
He
Albon was vocal about it, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I was having trouble keeping track of everything that was happening. I was surprised that there was no impact.
You were having trouble because you were worried about Lando keeping P1 in turn one, which he did, by the
Well,
way.
yeah, but once I saw the two or three cars shoot off and go off track, that was where I was trying to figure out like what is going on behind the first four cars, 'cause they're already single file, but everyone else is like four wide going through a tight little small section.
And by the time you see that in the race start, P1 and P2 are already two or three turns down away. So you're not getting a look at the start finish until like lap three. So we're all kind of like, what just happened? But it was an exciting, first turn. It changed a whole lot of positions. Now you had Albon pretty much out of the race, but you had Colapinto up there in the mix with, Yuki also got passed heavily in that, unfortunately. He was sacrificed in that turn one incident somewhere. But you had Alonso, Hülkenberg, Checo, and Colapinto, a strange group of three veterans and a guy in his third race that just kind of made this midfield pack while everyone else just kind of zipped ahead, which kind of made it exciting. You had almost two different races going on right away.
Yeah, I think the way that this race kind of operated, especially not having an early safety car, which I know that you were predicting.
Yes.
Yeah, I was kind of one shocked that there wasn't safety cars coming about or pretty early on in the race, but then at that point it was then trying to figure out like the separation without having as many overtake opportunities, you really do get these packs that form, and you start to see where the gaps form in between which cars. But yeah, that was cool. It was cool to see that after three laps, the position that everyone was kind of in after the beginning of the race isn't necessarily, set all the way to the end. But before the safety car, anyone was planning on the safety car like being pushed out. I think that the essentially the way that the strategy turned into just trying to stick to the person ahead of you and keep in that DRS range, because if you can stay in that DRS range, there's four spots on the track that can keep you there. But once you're outside of that, you're just going to kind of keep spreading out until pitting happens or safety car happens. So it was kind of a slow, slow burn once we got over the first couple of laps.
I agree 100%. And that slow burn was you had Lando inching ahead of Max while Max was inching ahead of the Mercedes duo, while Oscar was driving as quickly as he could to get around those two Mercedes because he was quicker. He was quicker the entire time. It's an extremely difficult course to pass, even with that second DRS zone. If you begin a race and you're on the same exact tires as both of those Mercedes, you have zero extra kind of give and take with that. They're all at 100% battery. They're all on fresh tires. Where Oscar's going to overtake here is when he can get on that other set of tires before them or go long enough so that they have old tires and he's finally hopping on the new ones. And that would be kind of the trend with this race. You would have people kind of take to the pits early, and people that would wait way later. I know Lewis Hamilton and Carlos Sainz committed to the pits early. So both Ferraris and Mercedes split their strategy. Whereas McLaren could kind of afford to both go long, just because they were up there and quicker than everyone else. And Max was just playing, he had to play Lando's game. The entire race, he was playing Lando's game. And you're nodding, so it sounds like you agree with that too.
Yeah, I think that on that last note, with as far as the Max and Lando fight, I think once the Ferraris were sort of out of the question at that point, it was more analyzing Ferrari's race, but not as much Ferrari versus Lando or Ferrari versus McLaren, but analyzing the fight then between Red Bull and McLaren, or Max and Lando. It was interesting to hear on the radio that it came to a certain point that I think it was Checo. I can't remember, or maybe it was just GP talking to Max, but it was essentially, yeah, like you said, Max was playing Lando's race. The strategy was to not be the guy that pits first. So at that point, you are trying to extend your tires as long as possible, but you also don't know how necessarily long you have to extend them because you're just playing off another person. And
Or the
then,
safety car too. The
yeah,
safety
true.
car that everyone thought might have came.
Yeah. And it ultimately didn't at all, which was very surprising to me anyway. I think we've had a safety car there like every year since like 2012 or something crazy. But yeah, so the strategy turned out to not be banking on a safety car. I think that, seeing how this race played out, I think the people that pitted early, would have been really hurt by like that mid-time safety car, whereas all the people that were kind of on the standard strategy running their mediums to hards to, 25 to like 35 laps were kind of the people that were banking on that middle of the race safety car. But yeah, it just all came down to tires, and the deficit that you had around the people around you. Lando ended up lapping like half the grid, I think, by the end. So there was a lot of like lap traffic that was becoming troublesome,
It
like
was
towards the.
self-inflicted at the very end, though. When he lapped
Oh, well,
Franco
yes. Yeah.
Colapinto, he almost put it into a wall, and that was just like, dude, come on, relax. He's not even getting points. He's a rookie. Slow
Yeah.
down, Lando. You're 20 seconds ahead of Max, and there's two laps to go.
Yeah. But
He had a great race. I'll give him that.
I think I guess with all the that we're talking about with the not having a safety car and tire strategy, I think the tires in general, I don't know your perspective, but it seems like the hards were not as good as expected, but then people were able to certain cars were able to survive at least on them. Like they weren't necessarily giving good traction, but they weren't deteriorating.
Yeah, my first thought was it was the polar opposite of Baku, where the hard tires were undrivable and the medium tires were just sticky enough that you could get some good laps on them. People were extending those. Or wait, am I thinking the opposite? No, Baku, the hards were good and the mediums were getting eaten alive.
Yes.
So in this race in particular, it was the hards were slidey and the mediums you just
Slidey.
wanted to stay on as long as you could. So you're right. Like it was almost discovered, it seemed like, by most teams midway through the race that we got to keep these mediums on for almost as long as we keep these hards on. And that, what was it, lap 28 to 38, that probability for a safety car was high. Everyone was coming to the pits then. Nothing really happened, but everyone was coming to the pits. So it was interesting to watch the development of the strategy. I think when Lewis pitted early at that point, and within the next 10 laps, it was asked to Oscar if he would be okay staying out a little bit longer. And I do remember when they asked the question, there was about 2 laps in between then and when he actually did pit. So Oscar did drive what I would argue is a pretty good race. And people can, say, oh, he's in the fastest car and he got P3. Well, he also passed 2 Mercedes and a track that's very difficult to pass on. And I'm pretty sure he might have passed Lewis twice. Not just off of, I think he had to pass him twice at one point because of his pit situation.
Yeah, as soon as Oscar was asked if he wanted to stay out or pit, but then be forced to pass Hamilton, he was like, I recommend we don't need to pass anyone. So that was kind of my focus at that point was, okay, what's the gap to Hamilton? And I knew already because it was so focused on the pit lap, or sorry, the pit loss. Amount of time. So I was doing my calculations from the Delta, and he essentially came out when he pitted, I think 4 seconds behind Hamilton was where he landed. So he did have to then pass both Hamilton and Russell. But he was able to do both first try that he attempted it
That
when he
tire
did.
difference. That
So
tire
the
difference.
Yeah, it was definitely he was in just a much faster car at that point in the race, so he was able to capitalize on passing them.
Little comments here and there. There was a comment made by Checo when he was trying to pass Colapinto. Gave him some compliments, saying he was hard to pass. I think that Williams is just hard to pass in that track because it's fast in the
Yeah,
straights and it can't turn. So.
I do think that I do think that it was cool to see, even though Albon, dropped out pretty early on, I did think it was cool to see, Colapinto up there in the mix. And you mentioned that, the people he's around, like those are not like other newbies that you're playing against in a very difficult physical track. That's one thing is with how physical this track is, especially the rookies that aren't used to it. Are going to be the ones that, face the brunt of that difficulty, I think. So it was cool to see him up there in the mix with all these other very much experienced drivers.
Yeah, I was conflicted for like a couple minutes, and then I had to like remember I'm a Williams fan. I do love Albon as a driver on my team. He's here next year. I shouldn't be unhappy with a DNF. If anything, watching the commentary from the drivers at the end, he did, while he was coming to the pits when he retired, he did argue that we should have just gotten a new engine and taken the penalty. So it almost seemed like they knew that there was something up with the engine, and now they're gonna have to do that anyway. So it sounds like Coda that he's going to take a grid penalty, but you never know if it's, somehow the fifth or fourth quickest car all of a sudden, or I'm saying fifth, I'm not going to say fourth, but it's probably quicker than the Aston Martin at this point. Yeah, I mean, you can make some places back if something happens. Start from the pits, it's a little safer back there. So hoping Albon can score some points at the USGP in a couple of weeks. But yeah, I don't know. Williams, happy to see it. What else happened? V-carb. That ugly livery did not get them any points, unfortunately. Yuki did have a great quali. There was a bit of controversy with Danny Ric, which, I think this will kind of take us into Danny Ric as well as, what's kind of surrounding. But last lap, Lando was sitting there with that little purple dot next to his name. Guess he had fastest lap. Then Danny Ricciardo pitted, slapped on new pair of softs, took it from him. Former teammate and everything to help out his other former teammate in the championship. What's your take on that? Do you have a take on that?
No, I think it's both smart and it shows that in a circumstance where he a lot of eyes are on him and his performance, because of his potential exit of F1, I think that it made sense for him to be like, "Hey, look what I can do," in that for that reason. But also just, VCarb is a, Red Bull sister team, so it's in their best interest to help Red Bull, and taking that single point away, be based on where we're at right now with championship standings, could be a single point that makes a difference in a world championship. So, in my opinion, it was something that he kind of had to do. So.
Yeah, I like that take. I think a lot of people are reading a little bit too far into it, at a time that I think it's awkward to even read too far into it. It was a strange weekend, and we both follow other content creators, and we're obviously tiny and just do our thing here. But I was following some content creators that are in the paddock, and I'm gonna name drop because whatever, but Kim Illman's one that we really enjoy to watch because he's a photographer, and we both kind of like the pictures that he takes and the stories that he has to tell. And he posted a video today that he just essentially said it was eerie after the race. Danny Ric stayed and was one of the last people there, and there were just a couple people there. It just felt like he didn't quite want to leave and just taking it all in. But there's been no news, and that is what is. And when I say news, people talk, but then there's a post, right? There's a official post. There hasn't been anything. It's now s Eastern time, Monday, 7:21 p.m., which means it's Tuesday morning in Singapore. We've had all this time.
I'm right there with you, and I was essentially expecting something to then be able to talk about for the recording,
Me too. That's why we waited.
especially especially putting in the extra day of buffer time. But then again, think back to past big moments when we've been expecting word from Red Bull, especially
Oh, yeah.
earlier on this year with their big controversy. They don't necessarily, rush to tell everyone what they're going to be doing. I do think that, it's not necessarily something that they would have needed to wait for a single race to make a decision. And then also, if it was, then it's you don't need that much time after the end of the race to then make that decision. So I'm with you. I'm kind of confused, and I don't think it's necessarily right to be just like dragging him along at this point is kind of what it feels like. But this doesn't like Red Bull, this doesn't change my stance on Red Bull. It just kind of seems that like this is how they run their business to me.
I'm definitely learning more this year than I have in past years of watching Formula One. And I'll admit I never watched Danny Ric when he was on Red Bull. I started watching when he was on McLaren. But I know that situationally it was similar. Like they just kind of were like, "Oh, Max is our guy now," and he hobbled over to McLaren to drive with Lando. And or no, I guess he had a year at Renault before that. But it's just I want to. Maybe this is me getting this parasocial relationship with Danny Ric, but like you see the interview with him and you want him to have the closure in the news so he doesn't have to take I'm not going to curse, that awful interview question over and over and over again. That's what's been frustrating me, where you have now I'm like going through shorts and it's like Danny Ric's almost in tears. Oh, okay. Oh, there's a kitty. Oh, Danny Ric's almost in tears. It's happened like multiple times to me at this point, and I just have frustration. The 10 minutes thing just came up, which is cool. I think we're good on time, but that's where my head's at with that. And I'm sure you're kind of in the same boat because I respect him as a driver. He's fun to watch. He's a nice guy, it seems. I don't know.
Yeah, I think they could have, and I said I already talked about this sort of like their treatment of him. But to me, they could have just done him such a better service. And if they are truly going to get rid of him, and we won't see him in COTA, it's they essentially took away that closure from him because he had the opportunity. He had to essentially pretend that, you know, the answer was no, and this was his last race at this whole event, and had to treat it like it was his last F1 event that he'll ever be, you know, be at as a driver. But it was with the unknown that if it was actually true or not. So it's like, I don't know, it's kind of like mourning someone that's not dead before they're dead. It's
Yeah.
like, it's just not
It's
how
just
you
gross.
wanna, yeah, it's not how you wanna look and how you want someone that you look up to be treated. I think he's done so much for the sport in general, and he's kind of, to me, he's always been like the face of the Drive to Survive end of, you know, F1 fandom. He was my first driver, you know, that I looked up to from that show. It just seems like they could have just picked a way better timing with everything. But I guess we have that now, the next 3 weeks to give them to see what they're going to do with it. To me, if it's like, if it's not by Coda, it's like, why even, like, what are you even doing? At least, like, drop a yes or a no is all you need.
Red Bull, you have 3 weeks to make the sickest of Danny Rick video ever if he's retiring. I'm giving you 3 weeks. It better be freaking fire because I'm annoyed right
That would help make up for it.
now.
But yeah, certainly interesting to see how, you know, this is unfolding, relatively as a relatively new fan. It's just interesting to see how the whole employee employer side of F1 and how it's cutthroat, and you know, there's not necessarily a lot of rules of like how you have to operate your business and team. But yeah, it's a drama at Red Bull right now, but that's what we've had for like the last year or so.
Yeah, I guess so. But yeah, so lots of I mean, just weird vibes heading into the Coda's in 3 weeks at the very least. We're coming back to the US. It's gonna be a 3 p.m. race for us, so we're very excited for that. Probably get some barbecue for that too. Get a little
Oh
themed
yeah.
party. That'll be exciting. And we have
Oh yeah.
3 weeks off, so we'll probably have episodes here in between, whether it be directly Formula One related, or if it's, some history thing that we get into, like we did on that Austria or Australia race a couple of, and then did we do a Monaco one too? I think we did a Monaco one.
I know we did the, I remember we watched Monaco. I can't remember if we did the episode on it.
Sorry, my
But yeah,
cats.
no, you're good. We've done, no, I think it's cool. We've done, if like watched a historical race before, with the intention of like you can watch along and then watch the episode, or you know, get interested on
Oh,
the
yeah.
episode and then go watch the race. But yeah, we'll have we'll work on something between now and then. And there's also some, I saw some IndyCar news today that made me want to chat about IndyCar. So I know their
Logan,
season's over, but
I'm picking my cat up because she's getting a little too. Okay, she's not doing it. Was it the Logan Sargeant news?
that was one of two things. Essentially, they announced a charter system
I saw that.
for IndyCar. So
I don't know.
I don't know much about it, but that's what it just, I just saw it, so I was interested in learning more about it and talking about it. But
We'll learn about it in this upcoming week and maybe talk about it this weekend. How does that sound?
that sounds good.
To give to before my cat turns my computer off, to give a preview of anyone listening, the charter system is currently used in NASCAR right now. It has created a tremendous amount of drama over the past, couple of months. So
I didn't know that, so that's interesting.
yeah, we're gonna have to probably during one of our workouts,
Unpack it.
we'll unpack it a little bit so you can do your research and give your own opinion on it. And maybe Saturday or Sunday we'll record something to talk about the new IndyCar charter system or something like that. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, and we're also like still in the interim of moving, but eventually we'll probably be back in person in the next couple weeks. So
Maybe
we'll,
by Coda.
yeah, we'll have to see. Maybe you'll see us in a nice little corner spot back in a basement.
Another basement, though. It's a different basement.
Different basement. It's not the same.
Yeah. 3 weeks. If you like this episode, if you stuck around, please like, subscribe, comment. Check us out on TikTok, on YouTube, on Instagram. She's going for that power button, I swear. As always, we appreciate it if you'd stay to the end. And yeah, Foster, any other words?
No, we hope you enjoyed the Singapore Grand Prix as much as we did, and you have a nice little break to catch up on all of your racing news and drama. And I guess we will catch you in the next episode. Thanks for
Bye.
watching.